Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 212, recorded on June 5th, 2014. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, the show where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I almost said we have communicators because I've been doing it for so long, but I am Michael Johnston, and Dave Hamilton is here with us instead of Jeff Gamet, but he's also from the Mac Observer, and he's also super cool, and he just happens to be at WWDC. Hey, Dave, how are you doing?
Hey, Michael, thanks for having me. Well, I'm not actually at WWDC at the moment. I'm in my hotel near WWDC because that's the more appropriate place to do a podcast from.
Probably better bandwidth there, too.
Oh, no, no, no. The bandwidth at the Moscone when Apple runs it is freaking amazing. Yeah.
That makes sense, though. And
right.
Of course, Adam Christensen is here from the MacCast as well. Hey, Adam.
Hey.
So Jeff couldn't make it, but we're pressing on with awesome stuff from WWDC. But I wanted to mention before we do that, tomorrow is National Donut Day. I think that's the most important news.
Seriously?
Yeah, it is.
I have to go.
Then,
I got to get in line.
Then I know where I'm driving.
Get in line for the donut keynote.
Yeah, that's right.
How was that, by the way, the keynote line? Was it insane as usual?
It started at 2:30 p.m. Pacific on Sunday.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say 2:30 in the morning.
No. Oh, no. By like 5 or 6 p.m., by 5 p.m., there were over a dozen people in line. And then by 8 p.m., it was probably 100 people in line.
Wow.
Ugh.
You know what? If you're coming from well, frankly, anywhere, it doesn't matter, and you need to stay overnight here, it's kind of cheaper than a hotel.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot cheaper.
That's why the vagrants
right,
do it.
Like, yeah, it's like it's almost free. You got to buy a lawn chair, right, that you're then going to donate to some homeless guy afterwards, which is fine. Yeah. But
tax write-off.
That's right. Yeah, on both sides of it. Yeah. Yeah.
It was really nice how they, you know, when the event started, they just all got up and left all their trash and refuse there. That was classy.
Yeah, I saw that photo.
That's good. Yeah, that's good.
So
I think I tweeted out, you know, they have to remember that their mom's not there, like at home to like clean up after them.
That's the problem, isn't it? It's so not nice to say.
Developers.
Especially since half these people could buy and sell us three times over.
Probably true.
So
I know.
Lots of cool stuff at WWDC.
But you're right, they left trash around, so they deserve that.
Yeah. But no, I remember the one year when I was in line for the keynote before Macworld. I don't know if it was 2007 or 2008. I remember there were some nice people just coming by with those big Starbucks boxes full of coffee and just giving it out. And I thought that was really nice of them. And
Was it Apple people? Because that's what they do at all their launch events.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it was just a nice person. They didn't seem to be branded with any Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, they treat the press well. Of course, they get the little buffet of Danishes and whatnot. Dave, were you there as press this year?
I was.
Okay.
For the keynote, yes. Yeah.
And what sort of benefits does that afford you as opposed to being a developer the whole way through?
I slept till 8 o'clock.
Yeah, you don't have to go wait in line to get a good seat.
Smart man.
But you know, in preview, and that's how it works with press, right? You can go in at like 8:30 or 9, you go upstairs, all the way upstairs to where the third floor where the event is. You don't get to go in the room yet, but you know, you kind of hang out with all the press, and like you said, there's a tray of Danishes and coffee, and it's civilized, which is great. It's a nice little perk. But usually, as I did this year, I fly in on Sunday, and then Monday morning's the keynote. Coming from the East Coast, in fact, this was the first year that I actually was able to sleep till 8. Most years I'm awake by about 5.
Sure.
And so I go out and check out the line. And this year I just didn't. I'd had a weird late night on Saturday. And so it actually worked out quite well because it kind of forced the time zone adjustment right on me, which, you know, worked out good. But yeah, at about 6 a.m., I want to say, they began letting the people that were in line outside, they started staging them into the Moscone. They bring you into the first floor through the cafeteria, then up the escalators kind of in waves. They stage you on the second floor and then in waves up the escalators when they can let you in. And I've done that before. Yep. It's actually a nice thing. You know, they do a good job with it. It's fine.
Yeah, I remember doing that too. So there was tons of stuff. This was an insanely packed keynote. Usually when an Apple keynote happens, there's like 20 minutes of fluff at the beginning, talking about how well they did in the previous quarter, et cetera, et cetera. And it seemed like they just kind of got right into it and just pressed on and on and on and on through feature after feature after feature. Was that your sense of it, Dave?
Absolutely. And it didn't stop when the keynote ended, right? I mean, there's more and more and more stuff, mostly aimed at developers, but things that will impact the end user quite greatly in some cases that they simply, you know, didn't get to in the keynote.
Yeah, tons of it.
Ton of stuff. So
I don't know if you got the list of talking points. Okay, so we can go through the stuff. We're going to maybe graze over the Yosemite stuff, but it is completely related to iOS stuff because the big thing with Yosemite is that they're integrating it as well as they can this year with iOS and in a really great way. So the first thing, AirDrop now works between Mac and iOS. And they gave that one slide in maybe a fraction of a second. They just said it and then moved on. I don't think they demoed it at all. I haven't really heard of anybody trying to use it, what the limitations are regarding it. But it seems like it would probably be fairly full-featured given the other stuff that was announced as well.
Yeah, I have not seen it demoed. I haven't made it. I don't know if there were any sessions on that, but if there were, I didn't attend those.
I would assume it works, pretty much like it does now, right?
Sure, yeah. Well, okay, so my experience with AirDrop between iOS devices has been annoying consistently. Have you guys had great luck or good experience with AirDrop between iOS devices? Because for me, it's typically I press the button, I want to AirDrop, and I'm waiting for people's faces to show up, and I go, "Hey, is your AirDrop on?" "No." "Okay, go in the thing." "Okay, press the thing," and then wait, and then wait. "It's not working." "Okay, wait." "Oh wait, it's not working." "Okay, now it's working."
Yeah,
that's pretty much it.
Okay. That's how it works for me too. Because you don't want to. And maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe we all are. But my feeling is I don't want to leave it on all the time because it feels like it's going to be a big battery sink, right? So maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe we should just all leave AirDrop to contacts only on our devices 100% of the time.
I do that, and that doesn't solve. I think the bigger problem is not flipping it on or off or getting the person to flip it on or off. I think the bigger issue that I've had with it is how long it takes before it actually establishes a connection and shows you that there's someone available. So even once you flipped it on.
That doesn't matter if it's been on.
No.
Okay, well then it's just me outsmarting myself. That's perfect.
Yeah. One of the coolest things they're calling these the continuity features. And he talked about, you know, we've got this great stuff with iMessages and it works across all your devices, but then you have these green bubble people. and he showed how basically you can now do SMS on your Mac, on your iPad. And for a moment I'm thinking, how are they doing this? And then a couple seconds later I go, they're routing it through the phone. That's amazing.
Yeah,
and so they're routing SMS messages and phone calls through the phone. So if you have an iPhone, then you can do all of your basic phone things from any of your devices. So if Dr. Dre gives you a call and your phone's in the other room, then you can pick it up on your Mac and talk to him and ignore your mom.
Yeah, again, as long as you have an iPhone.
Right, so it's contingent upon you having an iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, you know, one of the things that I immediately asked was, what is the security of this stuff? Are these SMS messages going through Apple servers in any way? Or are they being strictly routed through your Wi-Fi right to your devices?
No, I'm sure they're going through iMessage, through the iMessage protocol.
Okay.
Which is you know, public key secure.
Okay. So what? We've talked in the past about Apple and what they're willing to share with the government, and it seems as though the iMessages are more secure. They're less willing to give up that information. I don't think they can.
They don't have that information.
Yeah, they don't even.
They don't store it at all.
Well, no. So they get it, right? Correct me if I'm wrong on this, Adam.
No, I think you're right.
Okay. So the way iMessage works is if let's say I'm going to message you, Michael, right? The first time I put your number into iMessage on, say, my iPhone, it shows up green briefly and then switches to blue, right? As my phone realizes that you are iMessage capable. But it's more than just realizing it. When you set up iMessage on each of your devices, that device generates what's called a public key or a key pair. One of the keys is public, and that key only allows people to encrypt data. And the only thing that can decrypt that data is your private key, which never leaves your device, right? Your device generates it. It sends the public key up to Apple's servers, and then it sits there. And when I do that thing, when you turn blue for me, it's because I just got your public key. But I didn't just get one of your public keys. If you have iMessage on your Mac and your iPhone and your iPad, I just got three public keys from you.
Oh, interesting.
Right? Uh-huh. Yeah. And this is the problem. This is why when you switch to Android, right, you stop getting text messages because they're still being sent via this method. And Apple didn't build in a way for people to undo that. And so now they're getting beat up as they should for it. But so my guess is that it's using that. Your phone is simply using that same public or that same key pair infrastructure to send you messages to your other devices, because it knows, okay, well, this, you know, key is only good for Michael's iPhone. This is only good for his Mac. This is only good for his iPad. And it's a little more complex than that. I'm sure it uses a symmetric key and then encrypts the symmetric key with all of your public keys because it's less costly from an encryption CPU standpoint. But that's probably, I just lost everybody.
Yep. No, I'm following you. So you're saying that it doesn't encrypt a separate message for each of my devices. It kind of just does one in bulk.
You got it. No, that's exactly right. So yeah, quick primer on public key. Is it that whole, or encryption in general, that whole public key thing is awesome because you and I don't need to share the same password, right? It you know, if I want to send you a message, I just send it to you and I don't have to tell you what the password is. You have the password, but I don't, right? I can't decrypt that message, which is great. But that is very expensive math to do. So the way all public key encryption works is I actually generate a password and encrypt the message with that. And then I throw the password away. Before I do, I encrypt the password with your public key. And that's how we can have a group iMessage and I could send out, you know, Adam could be in on it too. It's one key for the whole message and then we just encrypt the key. So that's
why your show is called The Geek Gab.
I know, I'm sorry.
No, it's great. It's wonderful. I would love to have a conversation about this for like 20 minutes to fully grok it. But yeah, we do have tons of stuff to talk about. Yeah.
But the news here too is, since we went into all that encryption stuff, I would assume once your Green Bubble friend messages hit SMS, it's all been decrypted. So their messages aren't protected.
It couldn't be. That's right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So SMS is a whole different thing.
So yeah, but I guess I guess that means that my question about security is moot because it's being sent by SMS.
It was sent via SMS first before it got encrypted to bounce around your devices. That's right.
Yep. Okay.
Right. But then once it leaves, you reply, it has to go back into SMS.
Exactly.
Too. So.
Oh, yep. It's got to go through the phone. Oh, that's right. It's bidirectional.
Yep.
Sure. Yep.
So don't
Just
use the green bubbles.
People. So the Green Bubble people still are second class citizens, but
but it means even if you're
they get
a
few more privileges,
yeah. Right? And even if you're even if you're doing your messaging with that person from the Mac, your phone needs to have service.
Yes, and is it it has to be on the same subnet on the same Wi-Fi network?
For phone calls, it does. I don't know about
who knows. SMS. It may or may not.
I haven't messed with that.
Yeah, there's a lot. Well, and there's a lot of stuff. seems like Apple's doing a lot more with Bonjour and, you know, like...
Bluetooth LE.
I don't know what technologies they're using, but more direct stuff, right? A lot of the stuff in the keynote.
Yeah, they do have a lot of that going
about
on now.
Direct connectivity without requiring a centralized network for a lot of different services.
Yeah. Yeah, that may be playing a part in it. I guess we'll have to wait and see see what developers uncover as they start playing with this stuff.
Yeah, right.
Another cool thing, awesome thing that, I mean, I think when I first saw the iPad, I wanted a handoff feature where you could just immediately, send this to my screen, that kind of thing. And handoff sort of does that. So if you're working on a Pages document or you're surfing the web or doing an email, what have you, as long as you have compatible software on both ends on your iPad or iPhone and your Mac, you can easily hand off those tasks between the devices. And it's as simple as on your Mac, if you're doing something on your iPad, you see an extra icon off to the left of your dock and you press that and it kind of goes away on your iPad and comes up on your Mac. And the other way on your phone, you have the little icon on your lock screen. You just swipe on that. Same process. And it just looks awesome.
And, you know, that's not limited to Apple apps. Third-party, the APIs are all exposed and supported.
That's awesome. That's huge.
Yeah. So third-party developers, in theory, like Microsoft, could do this. Now, they may not have to, right? I mean, Microsoft is probably a bad example because everything's stored in OneDrive. So they've already kind of got that, you know, in a different way. But, yeah.
Yeah. But even just saving, I mean, even just the fact that it saves the sort of having to, because right from the lock screen, right, you can get into your document and move back and forth, or right from the desktop and launch it. So it saves clicks and swipes. So
you also got Instant Hotspot, which is very cool. So now that's definitely using the Bluetooth LE stuff. So the way that works is your phone can do a hotspot if you can do a hotspot. And you just go up to the Wi-Fi menu in your Mac on Yosemite, and it says, hey, I can connect to your iPhone if you want. And then you just press it and it does all the password negotiation and everything, setting up the hotspot on your phone with one click, and you're off to the races.
From your Mac, so you don't have to do that whole juggle that I always have to do, which is like turn on the phone, turn on the hotspot, wait for it to show up, go back to the Mac, pick the hotspot. I was really pretty excited about the feature. The one thing that really needs to be pointed out to people, though, because I've already got a couple emails about it from different folks, is you do need to, and you mentioned it already, but just to be super clear, you have to have a phone plan with Hotspot, and it's using that functionality. Yeah. Apple is not giving you a free Hotspot.
Right. They're making turning it on easy.
Yosemite. Yeah. Yeah. But some people were confused. They thought, oh, does that mean I now have Hotspot on? If I have an iPhone, Apple's giving me Hotspot for free. And no.
Yeah. I'm still holding out hope that AT&T will let me tether on my unlimited data plan. and if they don't, then you know what? My next iPhone is a T-Mobile phone. That's the plan. His next one is T-Mobile. So what else do we have here? Interactive notifications on iOS. So you get a text message, you get the little thing pulled down, and you just pull down on the little thing, and then you can pop off a little quick message and keep working on your stuff and not leave the app you're currently in. Same thing works with third-party apps, right? You can, if a Facebook notification comes in, you can like or comment, or, I mean, just whatever you would need to do. I think they showed off doing that with eBay as well. It's great. Yeah,
updating your bid on eBay.
Yep.
Yeah. They in the notification, if it's a drop down notification or a lock screen notification, as a developer, you have two options that you can customize. And if it's a modal notification, like you're in another app and you get like the total screen, like not total screen takeover, but total UI takeover, you can have five options there.
Interesting.
So that's which is good. I mean, I think that's probably enough.
Now, by options, good. You mean you can only choose between providing a a textual input or a button input, or are you saying?
No, you have two buttons that you can style and customize and, okay, and wire up to whatever feature in your app or whatever you want.
Or potentially one button and a text input or something.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting because I would have to dig into it more. I remember seeing that in the keynote with messages.
Sure.
In the session for it, I don't remember seeing anything of the sort.
Okay.
So it's either in the, you know, way, way advanced stuff that they didn't get into in the session, or no, that's kind of Apple's thing and you know, that's okay.
And they do that.
Totally do that. Yeah, but I don't know that they've done it with this, but it would not be unprecedented. That's right.
And you can also do that from Notification Center itself, right?
Notification Center or the lock screen.
Or the lock screen.
Right. Yeah. So, and
I love that, by the way, that Apple has specifically loosened the NDA with respect to WWDC, like the frameworks and such mentioned in the WWDC sessions. We can talk about those now. So I would have talked about it anyway, but I like the fact that they've finally come around to my way of thinking.
Well, I think it's good to build public awareness of, I mean, it's essentially out there. Why stifle that?
Right. Right.
And yeah, I was kind of curious about that, but that's cool. So all the session videos, not the, I guess, workshops, labs, rather.
The videos I can't republish and I can't take pictures in the sessions and post those. Right. But what we're doing here, talking about the concepts in general, no problem.
Cool.
Right. Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, though, it's limited to the stuff that they've shown, right?
Correct.
Publicly.
Correct. That's right.
In the actual session, so anything that's really covered in session videos in WWDC app, that's all cool,
all fair game. Yeah, cool. But I wouldn't know anything they didn't cover in sessions anyway because I'm not that smart, Adam. So it doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah. No. I thought maybe it was restricted to only the stuff that Apple has given out to the public because I mean technically no. I look at WWDC as not being a quote unquote public event, but maybe that's splitting hairs.
No, you're right. It's not. But there was a change to the NDA very specifically. Let me see if I can find it quickly here. Yeah, it says, you know, it talks about the NDA and you can't talk about anything. And then it says, right, you will not be bound by the foregoing confidentiality terms with regard to technical information about pre-release Apple software and services disclosed by Apple at WWDC, except that you may not post screenshots.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, right. So it's like, oh, perfect. It's exactly what we all did in the past anyway.
Right.
So
it's good and it spreads awareness.
Well, yes. and it
clarifies things like this, right?
Right. Sure.
If you get mad, my app didn't put four things in the Notification Center. Somebody says, well, I listened to the iOS show and they said that Apple doesn't let developers do that. Yep. It's not how it works.
Well, and the other weird thing, the weird conversation you always had, because I'm in, you know, I was in iOS developer groups and stuff like that. And then there'd always be the weird thing like, you know, we're all under this NDA and different people know different information. And it was never really clear. You know, it was just like, you did, like you said, you did it anyway. And you just talked about it, you know, and because you're not going to run around the room too and go, were you in the developer program? Were you in the developer program? Right. You're just running a thing going, we want to show you the new stuff and how you're going to code your apps up and stuff like that. But it was always this weird moment like, yeah, there might be people in the room that aren't actually in the developer program. Can we say stuff to them or not say stuff to them? You know,
well, technically, weird. By the NDA, you can't even say stuff to other people that are in the developer program that aren't working at your company.
Right.
So, you know.
But that was the old, that's the old one. Yeah. So it was always weird like that. Yeah. So even in that scenario, this makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Yep. But anyway.
So moving on, we have recents and favorite contacts in the app switcher, which is kind of neat. I'm sure we'll use that. It seems like a good idea where you can, if you can just, instead of having to, you know, swipe to unlock, go home, maybe click on the phone and then maybe have to tap favorites to get to your favorites. You just unlock, double click, and then there are your contacts right up there. So you can do your, it gives you three different options. I believe a text, phone call, and maybe email, something like that. It's pretty cool.
Cool.
There are some mail gestures now, so you can actually, I guess they're not so much gestures as they just kind of added more buttons to the current thing where you can swipe left, right? Because it's not like, what is it? mail plane.
You didn't have a swipe right in the past, did you, or did you?
No.
No, yeah. So that's new.
Swipe right is new to, like, mark as unread, I think is what it was, or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are quite a few more options in there. And there are some, they changed the way they do data detectors in mail now, which is pretty cool. So before, when someone sent you something that had like a time or date where you could just tap on it, it would highlight it, and you could tap on it, it would create something in your calendar. Now they move all that up to the top to let you know what it would actually do if you say, okay, go.
Right. Well, you don't have to hunt and peck for the stupid data detector.
Yeah, it's really cool. I love it.
Activating the data detectors was always weird, you know?
Yeah. I wonder if they'll do that same kind of thing for phone numbers as well. Not sure if that's as big a deal, but it's neat that they're doing that. So let's see here. So they have a tab view in Safari for the iPad, which is, I guess it's not a tab view. It's a page view where you can see all the stuff at a glance as you can on your iPhone.
Yeah, it's that more visual tab view, and it looks like they're going to group pages from single sites, if you have multiple tabs from that site, into mm-hmm. into little stacks. And then the other thing under there that I thought was good to see is your if you're using iCloud tabs, those show up underneath all that.
Yeah, I was playing around with it, and I didn't actually see where the iCloud tabs were, but that could have just been me.
They're right under the tab view. If you go into that tab view, they should be listed under there. That's what they looked like in the screenshot. And it's interesting because this came up in our Mac user group last night, and it was amazing how many people didn't even know about Safari iCloud tabs.
Yeah,
well, because it kind of falls in that continuity thing.
Right.
Yeah. It falls in the whole continuity thing where I can move from one device to the other, and I'm going to have access to all my tabs regardless of where I open those pages.
Yeah.
So.
Predictive type, which is something that it seems as though Apple's been working on since iOS 6. I think there were some plist tweaks you could do, and you could kind of bring up this UI that they have currently. But basically, it's way cooler than I think I could have come up with. So it suggests words for you.
Precognitive type.
Yes, as you're typing, and even before you type.
Right,
so,
that's what I said, precognitive.
Yeah. So, yeah.
We know what you're going to type before you even start typing it.
Right, and they gave the example of someone messaging you saying, what do you want to do tonight, dinner or a movie? And it offers the suggestions of dinner or movie, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And it also learns how you interact with individual people. So, one is a little more familiar with someone else, a little more personal or business professional with another person, and they kind of tailor your language based on that, what the suggestions are, which is really cool.
But they don't, that data never leaves the device.
Yes, and that's important.
Yeah, it's sort of, I mean, I simultaneously love that and also then want it to sync with my Mac and my iPad.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Right, you know.
Totally. So,
yep, of course.
I want it
on all my devices is right up until the point where there's some security problem, at which point I don't ever want that to have happened.
You know, I wonder if they can handle that at some point. I mean, maybe because they're just launching this feature now. But, I mean, you'd think they could handle that at some point with, like, just a whole peer-to-peer thing. Since there's so much of this going on where your devices are going to be able to recognize when other devices are nearby that you own.
Right.
So you'd think you could kind of do it just privately, just shuffle it over, you know, Bluetooth or some other protocol, you know, that's not out there in the open. And it seems like that kind of data wouldn't be that large that it would have to go out to the cloud somewhere and then back, right?
Yeah, right. That could easily be peer-to-peer synced. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they just didn't, you know, they don't have time to implement it yet, but they could figure out a secure way to make that happen in the future, I would think.
Right.
You should send that in to apple.com/feedback, Adam. It's good.
Yeah, I like that they're doing all this. They're really focusing heavily on the peer-to-peer thing, and I think it makes a lot of sense because, I mean, you may have one of your devices next to another one of your devices, but you may not in all cases be connected to a Wi-Fi network or want to go through all of that, but you at the same time can gain a lot of benefits from having the connectivity without the router.
Yeah.
The one bummer, though, that they didn't talk about, and I think I've wanted for a while, and I know this is like Joe Kissel's thing too, is can we have like the contextual awareness for like our notifications? So like if I have three devices and it sees I'm working on my Mac, can it just give me my notification on my Mac and not have to show up on my iPhone and my iPad?
Yeah.
I needed that just as I was sitting down to do this show, because I wired everything up and I put my headphones in and I can, you know, I'm all set at the little desk in the hotel and I get a text message and I have my iPad in my lap, right? So no question, I'm online, I'm using a device, but my phone, which I'm just charging over on the bedside table, is across the room and I'd forgotten to mute it. So it's, you know, chiming and doing all its stuff when the messages come in. I'm like, oh, I got to go up and I got to mute that. But I shouldn't have to. It should just know that I'm right here. It's all good. Well, they don't let me have multi-users on the freaking iPad. So, you know, there should be a benefit to that, right? That restriction. So.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully that's coming someday. You know, now that they're doing more of this stuff where devices are going to be aware of each other and their proximities and, you know.
Yeah, well, they've got
iBeacon technology. They should even know, you know, which ones are close to what and how close they are. So if I have my iPhone and my iPad and, you know, all within a couple inches of each other, figure it out.
Yeah, sort it out.
Yeah. Well, they do have, you can kind of manage that to some degree, where if you're on your Mac and a message comes in, it kind of comes to my Mac first, but then quickly thereafter goes to my other devices. But you can stop that from happening, or you can at least stop it from chiming on the other devices if you switch over to the Messages app before that happens. Yeah,
be smarter though.
Yeah, definitely be smarter.
I'm composing an email on my Mac and then a text message comes in, you know you can just send it to the Mac. You don't have to send it to those other devices.
True. But then again, you start running into issues of, well, what if somebody else is using my Mac? What if it's not me? You know,
well,
someone's checking Facebook or whatever.
It's still in the notification center or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
Know? Who knows? I don't know. Maybe that's, you're right. Maybe that's why
they know when they're in close proximity too. I don't know. You start to get to overthink and outsmart yourself doing that stuff. But
yeah. That's probably why they haven't done it yet.
Yeah, I'm sure that, yeah.
It seems like this kind of stuff is on their radars.
Mm-hmm.
So that is good. So tons of cool stuff for messages in iOS 8. So there are in Threads now, I guess the biggest feature that got the most applause was the fact that you can remove yourself from a thread. If it's going crazy and you don't want to hear any more of the insanity in there, you can either remove yourself from it, so completely stop getting notifications and everything, or you can simply mute the thread for a while. You can turn on the Do Not Disturb. You keep getting messages, but it just won't chime in your pocket, which is great.
You can't remove yourself from an SMS group, only an iMessage group, right?
I don't know.
I can't imagine that they have created a way to remove yourself from an SMS group.
Well, if you think about it, they have the, what do you call it? Blocking of callers and text messages and all that stuff. And that I believe works regardless of whether they're on iOS or not. Right.
Yeah. But I don't think this is a blocking. I think it is a tell the iMessage server that I want to be removed from this and actually remove me from this group, not let the other people think I'm part of it, even though I'm blocking the reception of their messages.
Yeah. And I think that while they could probably do it that way, I'm guessing that Apple being Apple wouldn't do it that way.
Wouldn't. Yeah. So if you're part of an SMS or MMS group, I don't think you can remove yourself from it, but you could mute it temporarily or full time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. You can rename them. So if it's a group
Thank
message.
Goodness. Yeah.
I like
You don't have to have the first person. Because you never know. Like, I'm in a couple groups and all you get is whoever started that thread, you see their name. And it's like, that doesn't tell me anything. Like, I don't. Why was I in this? I mean, if you can't remember, so that's going to be helpful.
Yep, that's cool. You can share your location with people in the group, which is neat. So you get the ad hoc sharing right there, and you don't have to do find my friends or anything.
That looks like it's totally enabled through Find My Friends, though, right?
Because it looks
same
to be
kind
that.
Of option. Same kind of options. Like, I only want to share my location for an hour, a day, or indefinitely.
But it is nice to have it tied with messages, because chances are...
Oh, it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, right. Exactly. If you want to share your location, you want to talk to them, too.
Yeah. I've never used Find My Friends, honestly, and I can see myself actually using it within message threads when I'm at different events or locations or, you know, in things like that. So
it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I'm surprised we didn't have you as part of the Find My Friends group when we were all here at Macworld, but
I probably was in that. I mean, that's the one like time I use it, but I don't use it. There's so many other options, you know, and I don't know. I don't need to know necessarily where people are. That's just the thing. Like, I guess that's the point right here, is me knowing your exact location is kind of secondary to me trying to get a message to you usually when I'm at those places, right?
Sure.
So
totally.
I'm going to message you, hey, what's up? And then I might check, you know, if you're nearby, hey, you want to grab lunch or whatever, but who knows?
Yeah.
Yep. And there's also a really neat attachments view where you can see all, I think it is actually all of the attachments that have ever been exchanged between any of the messages, not just. So I know that, for example, if you don't scroll up at all and you tap on an attachment, then you can swipe back and forth whatever attachments have existed within that section of messages that have been loaded. So if you're like me and you keep all of your messages, you can scroll back and back and back, and it keeps loading chunk after chunk after chunk. But if you're swiping through that stuff right now, it only shows you the stuff that is related to that current chunk that's been loaded. So I don't know if the attachments take into account everything or if it's just that chunk. I would imagine it's probably everything, though. Although I don't know what kind of overhead they need. I don't know what.
I think you just get a thumbnail view, and they probably load them dynamically.
Well, sure, but at the same time, you'd think, oh, it's just text. You could just load all that stuff. But then again, it may be the fact of not so much the actual loading of the text as it is actually rendering all of the bubbles.
But are we talking about the same thing?
Yeah.
Maybe I got confused.
I think we are.
I thought you were talking about the whole photo thing.
Yeah, photos.
All the messages. Attachments and stuff. Video. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Really neat feature that they took from what? Snapchat? Tap to talk.
No.
Tap to record a voice memo to send.
Right.
Okay.
Or video, right?
Or video, right. Yeah, totally the Snapchat thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Snapchat does that?
Yeah.
I know. Well, I don't use Snapchat.
There's a bunch of other, like we use Voxer.
Yep.
Which is a whole push to talk sort of messaging system.
Yeah, but hey, this is way more convenient because it's right in your messages. So you can... Yeah, you can. I believe you can even just while you're in a message, I think you can just put the phone up to your ear.
Yep.
And it'll make a tone, and then you say what you need to say. And you take it away from your ear, and then it sends it away.
Sends it. Yeah, the whole
method for podcast distribution. You just get a whole group message going of all your listeners, and then you put the phone to your ear, and as soon as you take it away, you're published. No RSS feeds to deal with. Nothing.
It's a game changer.
It's disruptive.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The only bummer is your green bubble friends.
Yeah. We don't actually have any green bubble friends. I mean, it's this myth, right?
Right. You know. But I'm assuming this is another one of those things that's only going to work if you're on an iOS device. I don't know what would happen if you try and send that audio over SMS. I guess you can send those things over SMS. So I guess they just get a little.
Well, when I sent it to you guys, I sent it to you and Jeff yesterday, and I don't think either of you are on iOS. It sent it as an AMR, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yep. What is that? What's that extension?
I think the same thing they use for ringtones, isn't it?
No, it sounds like a ringtone extension.
No, I think it's what they use for...
in-app, inside the Mac Geekab app. I think we had to make an AMR file, right, for the sounds in the app.
Possibly.
But it's also the ringtone thing.
I thought it was the outgoing voicemail thing.
I thought it was that
crappy quality codec.
Adaptive multi-rate audio.
Okay. It's there adaptive. It is. Okay.
Woohoo.
So maybe it'll work with...
audio data compression scheme optimized for speech encoding.
Okay. That makes sense.
Uses narrow bandwidth. Yeah, so something that was developed for mobile specifically, I think.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, so yeah, video and photo as well on that, so that's pretty cool. It makes it a lot easier to do all those things, and your duck face selfies of Greg Joswiak and stuff like that, which was great. They were all having a lot of fun up there on stage, weren't they?
Oh, they were yucking it up all right. Yeah.
And I really enjoyed the hedge trimmer that they were going to use on his hair.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was good. I really liked that.
That was good. No, that's good.
Like Apple Comedy Hour.
Yeah. And it worked. It was good. And then Raise to Listen as well, so you can listen to those things when they come in. iCloud Drive, big announcement. Which kind of brings back the, what was it, .dot Mac drive? Whatever they called that, the Mac drive? Isn't it essentially that?
Say that again? Which iCloud drive?
iCloud drive.
iCloud drive, yeah, which is like, what do we have?
It's no different.
iDisk.
Well, it is different.
iDisk,
but
there you go.
Yeah, but it's not really different from the just loading the mobile documents folder, right?
Sure, yeah.
I mean, it's the same paradigm. It's just now it's supported. Which is good, but it's different.
It's a bigger deal in OS X Yosemite, though, right? Because now my iCloud drive, it looks like a folder, like a Dropbox folder, and I go in there and I can see all my documents from all my different apps.
Yeah, you can see it app specific, and then you can put everything that you want in that main catch-all bucket, or you can put it in specific app buckets. And
but you could do that now with Mavericks.
But it's hidden away.
That's what I'm saying. But when you finally go load it in Mavericks, when you open up that home library mobile documents folder, it says iCloud up at the top of the finder, not mobile documents. Which is interesting.
Right, but people don't know where it is, right?
No, of course.
Apple saying, here's the folder, here's your documents. You can get them back and forth.
Right, yeah.
We understand this.
You do get the option of being able to just chuck a file into that iCloud folder, right? And then all of the apps can see it.
Correct.
Well.
So it's outside the little sandbox, right?
No.
No.
It's synced. So... it's synced everywhere, right? Just like it is now.
Sure.
Okay. But in order for an app, that's a great question, because on iOS, the way that it works is apps don't get to see into the sandbox of other apps.
Right. Okay. Yep.
That's still number one rule. You cannot go poke around in somebody else's sandbox. However, when a user pulls up the document picker, which is the thing that lets you open a document inside your iOS app.
Mm-hmm.
You have the ability to go, the user has the ability. The document picker is out of band of the app, right?
Right.
It is at the Apple framework level. Okay, so at that point, a user can go in and say, I want to open this document from a different application. And it'll let it open. But the user is actually creating that permission for that single application or that single document. So you can't go and poke around in there without the user saying, yes, you can have that document and you can have that document and you can write. And it's an explicit thing. All that said, the application that you're picking the document from has to be rewritten and recompiled with a flag set that says, I will allow my documents to be selected by the user when in other apps in the document picker.
Right.
So things that are at the top level of iCloud, why maybe they show up everywhere.
It looks as though they do based on the screenshot on Apple's site.
They might, yeah. But again, in your application, we'll only see documents of types that it looks for too. So like when you pull up the document picker, you know, if you say I read PDFs, well, the text files, even if you have them everywhere, are not going to show up, right?
Right.
It's only going to be, it's a very... You as the developer set the view of what you want the user to be able to select.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I mean, from a security standpoint, from a sandboxing standpoint, this stuff makes sense. I mean, the gist of it that
it's got
coming out of it is they've enabled developers who want to turn that feature on to sort of flip around the whole open-in. Again, it's saving clicks, right? So
yeah.
Now I don't have to go into the other app, find the document, select it, say, no, I really want to open this in Evernote. Right. Now I'll be able to go into Evernote, go bring up, you know, do the open thing and say, okay, it's in, you know, whatever other text app I have, you know,
One important thing there is the current way, the iOS 7 way, the open in way creates a copy of that document, right? Which is fine if it's a text file or a small PDF, but if you want to take a freaking like 1 gig movie and play it in a player, like if you want to play it in VLC player, because whatever you downloaded in GoodReader doesn't support it the right way, your iPad is going to crash because there's no way that this you know gigabyte file is going to make it over. With the new method, with this whole,
it leaves it where it is.
It's a URL pointer, so it's referencing the same file.
Cool,
which is great. Yeah,
that's gonna be a lot better.
So when you make changes in one app, it propagates back to the other app because it's the same document.
That's an interesting thing. You can't make changes.
Oh, you can't.
No,
I thought you could.
Well, you can, but then you can't save them back to that. Huh. You have to save them back somewhere else.
So then you have to make the copy.
Yes, exactly.
Hmm.
Yeah, this all got it. And to be honest, that part of, I saw that session this morning, that part of the session got, they went through it really fast. And it was like, wait a minute, you just said I can't make changes. Where are we now? So I got to go watch that session again. But yeah, they made it clear it's read only.
Oh, that stinks.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it just means the app developer has to be a little more creative about how they deal with that kind of data.
Sure. And I guess it's all from a standpoint of maximum security, or as much as they can provide.
That's totally it, right?
Sure. Yeah, right. I mean, because you know, who knows, you could write all kinds of stuff back in if you were clever and
sure, yeah,
figured out hacky things to do.
Very true.
Back into someone else's app, and they want to avoid that at all costs.
Mm-hmm. So another cool thing that we were all expecting, HealthKit in the Health app.
Right? Oh, I thought Apple bought HeathKit. I thought we were all going to be able to make our own circuit boards.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Dang it.
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't do that. If Steve was there, maybe he'd be cool with that. I don't know.
You mean Steve Wozniak?
Well, it was talked about in the book, right? That Steve Jobs used HeathKits.
Right. That's true. Yeah.
So, but he may be opposed to them now.
You know, I was going to wait until after we talked about extensibility to bring this up, but since you brought him up, what's fascinating about extensibility and also iCloud Drive is that Apple has made it clear that it's okay to go back on the word of Jobs, right? These are things that Steve Jobs explicitly said would not be, you know, were not things he was into. And yet now we have them, and not just have them, but one thing we didn't talk about with iCloud Drive is it's not that you can do this with your other documents that are stored in iCloud. Anybody can write an extension to iCloud Drive that lets you access your file store anywhere. Enterprise stuff, Dropbox, right? OneDrive, anything. And it's like a complete 180. And by the way, we're 3 miles down the road already. Here you go.
Right. So you basically get it's kind of like a little mini finder almost.
Yeah.
But you know, Steve always, he went back on his own word.
Yeah.
Of course he did. Right. No, that's actually a really good point. Right. The word of Jobs was good right up until the day that Jobs said it wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. They'll never put video on an iPod.
Right. Never. Yeah.
So
and Motorola chips are the best.
That's true.
Yes. We could spend all day probably.
Right. Uh-huh. No, it's true. So I'm glad Apple's not just leaving, you know, that in stasis.
Definitely.
I'm glad they're reevaluating constantly. It's what they should be doing.
Well, I think the main point there though is not that they're just changing their minds. They're the reason they made the proclamation to begin with that they weren't going to do something was based on not being able to do it in the way that they wanted to do it. Right.
There you go. And it's saying that I think is very relevant because I don't believe that they changed their minds.
Right.
I think they have plans, and certain ones are doable in the way they want to do them, and certain other ones aren't. And the ones that aren't and can't be done the way they want to do them, they just say, oh, we're not doing those.
Yeah,
I'll give you that with extensibility, but I will not give you that with iCloud Drive. They've had the ability to do this for a long time.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, and it's would not. And then finally, they realized that they should.
Yeah. Well, with all the headaches that the developers have had to go through, and eventually having to create their own services to mitigate that problem.
Right.
Clearly they needed to make a change.
It was going to happen. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. With or without them, and it was happening without them.
Yeah. So sorry, health kit. I'm sorry, Michael.
No, it's fine. So the health kit, it basically pulls together all of your different health related devices into one interface, right? So you got your fuel bands, you got your special scales, maybe sleep apps, things that there's a lot of stuff built into this. They gave it one or two slides and then they kind of moved on.
Well, if those partners want to implement HealthKit, that
right.
is.
So it's an API so the HealthKit API allows developers to let Apple's health app pull the data from those individual apps and aggregate it into one nice view.
And other apps potentially.
Right.
Now, the one thing that I didn't fully understand was the integration with doctors. How does that work? Is that they said that Mayo was going to do something, and they said that it would be awesome, but they didn't really make it clear how.
Well, I think that's what Adam was saying, right? Is like the Mayo Clinic can write their own app that then takes that data, or the data that you give it permission to take. Mm-hmm. And sends it up to them and lets them see it and mess with it in whatever way they want to do.
The way I kind of understand it, it sounds like the health app kind of has a central data store. And so HealthKit, those APIs, if you have an app that, you know, works with your device or works with your hospital or whatever it might be, it doesn't matter. You can just basically expose, and if we want to call them connectors or tunnels, or not getting too technical, I've worked with middleware, and to me, all these kit things is what they are, is they're middleware for the operating system, right? And so they're giving you a way, your app, a potential way to write into the central data store. The user has to give permission to say yes, you can put this into the health app, I think,
and read from it,
right? They get to decide which apps get to read and write, what data goes into that central data store, and kind of control it. But the whole point is having a central data store for all this information means that other apps that you allow permission and that implement the HealthKit, technology, they'll be able to take advantage of that. So in the case of the Mayo Clinic app, you would install the Mayo Clinic app, you would connect it up with your doctor, and then through, whatever you have in your health central data store, you can tell it, yes, share this, go ahead and share my, my blood glucose or my heart rate information with the doctor.
And it just goes out automatically.
Potentially. I would imagine it depends on how the app, how the app is implemented. Yeah.
Yeah. They kind of presented it in a way of, your phone is based on all the information that your phone is gathering and streaming to your doctor. Your doctor says, oh, okay, there's something we have to look at here. And he gives you a call and says, hey, based on this stuff that I'm seeing, we're going to have to get you in and have a look.
Yeah, and I would assume you would probably, hopefully you have controls to say, go ahead and share this for, same kind of thing like you do with the location services in Find My Friends. Go ahead and share this for a day or a set period of time or a week or, indefinitely, and then control all that stuff.
Yeah.
Who knows? Cool. But the point is these things are going to be able to talk to each other through this central data store, with your permission.
So moving on, family sharing, which is something that isn't a huge deal for me, but for a lot of other people. So it lets you do the photos thing. I imagine so you can do a family sharing photos album, or maybe I don't really get exactly how that works differently than albums. I don't think it probably does. It's maybe just automatically set up for you, and you can say, hey, do you want to send this to your family? And then it goes.
Because it'll know who your family members are because you set them up as a family share. So, the issue right now is you could set up a photo stream and just invite your family members, and do it that way. It's my understanding with family sharing, what you can do is you take one account, one Apple ID, and then you can associate five other Apple IDs with it. Or I think it's, they say six. I think it's six total though, right? Members, Dave?
I believe it's six total.
Yeah. Right. So including the master, whichever you, account you define as the master account.
Yeah. So the big thing is the sharing of iTunes stuff, right? I mean, that's what everybody's been wanting, is some way to manage how someone with one central credit card is allowing people to buy apps and songs and all that stuff, and managing that process for everybody to make it as painless as possible.
Well, and not having to change iTunes accounts every time you want to download an app that your wife downloaded or that your kid downloaded, right? That's the issue, is now, right now, everybody has to use the same account to get that functionality, and this solves that problem.
Right. So you don't, so the way that this works is your individual family members don't need to use the same iTunes account. They just need to be using the same credit card.
That's correct. And then also linked in whatever way Apple's going to have us link these accounts. But yeah, but then you don't need to sign in and out. You just get access to everything that those six accounts have purchased.
Yeah.
Central. Which is great. It's a hack, right? I mean, sure. Really, what you should be able to do is just associate accounts. This is the iTunes infrastructure was not built to do any of this, right? And so they're scrambling over there to figure out, okay, we've created these pain points, but if we change them, it breaks it for, 30% of the people out there. That's bad. So they have to create these like all-inclusive workarounds, which sucks for them, but whatever. That's their problem to solve.
Yeah. And the one really cool thing that they have built in there is so if you're in a situation where you're allowing your kids to buy things on iTunes, you can set it up so that it'll actually ask you for permission before they can go through with the purchase.
Right. It sends you a little message and says, hey, Billy wants to buy.
Yeah.
This app, is it okay? And then you say, okay. And then your card gets charged.
Yeah. And they're taking care of the in-app purchase thing and just general purchases with that. And
now what's not clear to me, and I'm curious, because again, the way this works is there's one credit card on the master account, and my understanding, one credit card on the master account, and that's the one that's going to get charged, and everybody else is kind of under that account.
Yes.
So does that mean your spouse is going to have the same kind of thing have to happen?
Yeah, that's right. My wife will have to charge all her purchases to my credit card.
Well, no, I get that, but so okay. If she goes to make a purchase after you set up family sharing, are you going to have to approve all her purchases?
Well, don't you do that anyway? No.
But you know what I mean? That's going to be real annoying if you can't say, these are kid accounts, this is my spouse account.
Why can't you? I got the feeling I got, and maybe it was just projecting, because I immediately thought, oh, this is great, because this is what we do at home already. The kids, I mean, it's commonplace. Even for a free app, the kids ask us, can I download, this? And we take a look.
The same thing.
Right. So it was like, hey, great. They're implementing in technology that which we've already taken care of at home. Mm-hmm. But so maybe that's why I projected that my wife and I wouldn't have to get each other's permission to download apps. But if we do that, it could get sort of annoying if we're not in the same room with each other.
Of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's seamless. You just get a notification on your device and you just tap a button and away it goes. But if my wife wanted to download something.
Or vice versa, right? I'm here in California and it's midnight and I want to check out some app that some dude just showed me, and it's 3 a.m. for my wife. So I need to call her and say, hey, honey, can you approve my app purchase? Right. I mean, this is that's. I guarantee you that's been thought of and dealt with. Because otherwise,
that's true. Those executives have wives and stuff, right?
Well, and husbands too. I mean, right?
Husbands,
But that's the question: which is it? And I mean, are my kids going to need to give me permission to buy an app?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I didn't mean it that. I didn't mean it that way.
Who knows?
But whoever has the master account with the credit card attached,
right,
I think gives the approvals.
True.
But so the question is, if it's all tied to my account and I was the one that put in the credit card, is my wife going to have to, or can I pre-authorize her and say, no, anything that this account wants to buy is authorized?
Yeah. Yep. I'm going to make my wife the master account, so she pays the bill for all of my app purchases. This is going to be good.
But then you have to ask her for permission, and then the phone plays a little whipped anyway. Sound after.
Yeah, you have to do that anyway.
I have to. It doesn't matter.
Now it's just it more already plays automated.
That's right. It's enforced.
Okay, so Photos on iOS looks really cool. So especially with the tweaking, the editing of the photos, they have now for brightness and color, and it's awesome because now you can just say, as you do in your mind when you look at a photo, you say, oh, I want that to be a little lighter, I want it to be a little darker, I want the color to pop a little more, a little less. It would be awesome if you could just, you know, turn a dial and make it just do that thing that you want it to do without having to worry about all the associated actual things that you would have to do in order to manipulate this image to make it look that way. And that's what they do now with those things in Photos. And it's awesome.
Yeah. Except here's the thing. Cause I get excited about this stuff all the time. And then, you know, it comes out and then I'm disappointed. And you know why? Is because they pre-test all these images they use in the demo.
Sure, yeah.
And they know that that one click button is going to work like awesome with that one photo. It's like got all the right things set, right? So I'm a little skeptical that it's going to work that well every time for everyone. You know, but
who knows?
Hopefully it does.
I think Apple definitely cares very greatly about photography on the iDevices. So I think that they've probably tried to put a lot of logic into making that work pretty well. And I played with it just very, very slightly, but it seems to work well. And of course they're on the right path because that's what you ultimately want to do is you just want to turn a knob and make it go.
Right.
So they're doing the
right
thing.
Yeah, it gets rid of that confusion of where are my photos? You know, are they in PhotoStream? Or I mean, it's nice to see that just fade away too.
Yeah, so you got it stores all your photos and videos if you want. So in addition to the PhotoStream, which is a kind of a gratis 100 photo rolling thing.
1,000.
It's 1,000 now?
Yeah,
it's always been 1,000.
I thought it was 100, but okay.
Yeah.
So now they'll store everything for you. And you can search for stuff. They keep track of all the edits and everything, all the manipulations and moving of things into albums and all that kind of stuff, which is neat. And it actually gives you access to all of your photos, even those that you don't store on your device, which is awesome. That's something that I and a lot of people have been wanting for a long, long time, because if you've ever been in a situation where you're like, oh yeah, you know, when we went down to Coachella, I got to show you this photo. Oh wait, I already pulled that photo off my phone. I can't show it to you. Never mind. You know?
Right.
Yeah. Again, except here's, I'm going to be the buzzkill on all this.
Yeah, stuff. Go for it.
You have 5 gigabytes of iCloud storage.
Well, 5 gigabytes free, but so they now have, they're right. Rolling out new iCloud storage plans. They got 5 gigabytes free, 20 gigabytes for 99 cents a month, which is cool. It's what is it? 20 bucks a year for 20 gigs?
12?
No, I mean,
yeah,
there's
12
now.
Months and it's 99 cents
I mean,
cents
now.
A month.
It's
right. Currently.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah. But then they're lowering the price to a buck a month. And then for 200 gigs, it's $4 a month. And then they have tiers up to 1 terabyte.
And they haven't announced 1 terabyte pricing, right?
They haven't really. I don't think they've gone over those other tiers yet.
Now, what's interesting is, you know, they. God, I should pull up my notes on this. There's an interesting paradigm here because they're doing. I can't remember if they talked about it in the keynote or in the State of the Union thing afterwards. But do you guys know about how the whole hosting of apps for developers and hosting of databases for developers is something Apple is now doing. Was that in the keynote?
That was in the keynote, very briefly, the CloudKit, right?
Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah, okay. So the thing about that is that they're giving developers a ton of free storage, right?
And bandwidth.
And bandwidth. And you only pay when you get like really, really successful, which in theory should be okay. But Apple runs the server, and they said that for any given application, it's free up to a petabyte of assets.
Yep.
Which they in their example said, and I think this example came in the subsequent session, was 10 billion photos for free. And I was sitting next to a developer, and I turned to him and I said, "Hey man, what if you put an open source app out, right? You know, that you just compile and run on your device, and now you too get 10 billion photos, right? I mean, there's a business model here, right? For a developer to just say, okay, well, I'm going to host, millions of photos per person, and I have a limited number of customer slots. Go.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. It does sound like something that could be abused or taken advantage of. I'm not sure how Apple's going to see it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. They have not announced to my knowledge, any extensibility of the Photos app. So it would be a somewhat manual process of saying, okay, I got to offload my photos up to this, you know, Dave's crazy photo storage, you know, house du jour. But, but it is kind of weird that it's like, wait a minute, you're letting developers, but okay. Right. Great.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
You know, what the hell's going on here again?
Yeah. So yeah, moving on, we still got tons more to talk about. We don't want to take up too much of your time, Dave. But we got Hey Siri. There's a bunch of different stuff with Siri. So there's Hey Siri, which I love. I've been there so many times where I can't get to my phone, or I don't want to touch my phone, but I want to do something with Siri.
Sure.
And I would have loved to just yell at her and have her do something. So now, so long as your device is plugged into power. So that means you can't, you know, walk into the office and say, "Hey Siri," and have everybody's phones go off. So it has to be connected to power, but you say, "Hey Siri," and then you can continue speaking and have her do something for you, which is awesome.
"Hey Siri, text my mom. I'm running naked down the street."
Yeah.
Right. That's not going to work.
Yeah.
But it would be kind of funny.
Kind of like the Google Glass prank.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I do that in the house though. Anytime I hear the Siri noise, I just start talking and say that, because it'll do it, you know.
Yeah.
It'll pick up on it. The family hates me for it, but that's okay.
I would.
I'm the only one who uses Siri in my family, so.
I think I've unintentionally deterred my entire family from wanting to use Siri, but it's kind of annoying when, you know, you're having like lots of conversations going on and then suddenly someone's like screaming at their phone, "Siri, please tell me the weather." And you know, they're in a crowded room. So that's when I started doing it. I just yell, "Hey Siri, text my mom."
That's why I have Race to Talk.
Yeah, I do that. The Race to Talk is great.
That's much better.
If I don't know that
you're like screeching at your phone trying to get Siri to work, then it doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah. Yep. So it has streaming voice recognition, which is cool. So you can watch what she's understanding as you speak to her. That's neat. And there's also Shazam, which it's built into Siri. And I believe that means that you can just kind of you press down your home button, invoke Siri, and just instead of saying anything to her, I think you can just have her listen to the music and she goes, "Oh, okay. Yeah, I see what you're doing." And then tells you what the song is.
Sure.
And you can also buy iTunes content through Siri, which is...
Of course.
Of course. Of course you can do that. They've made some changes to the App Store. And so one of the things that I got excited for very briefly, very momentarily, was when he said test flight, because I thought it was, or maybe app previews. I got excited for both of those when he said those, because I was hoping for actual shareware style trial apps.
That was previews. The developers all did too. It's a real awkward moment in the video.
Oh, was it?
A few times. Yeah.
That was my question. Because everybody.
Uproarious applause for half a second till Tim says video previews.
Yeah. And then everybody goes, "Oh,
oh yeah. Yeah." No, there was a noticeable, wave of disappointment. Like, oh, crap. Oh, it's that.
You know, it's funny. Cause you hear the courtesy look claps at the end. Like, "Oh, okay. It's okay.
Like,
Tim.
We acted like we were excited. So we're going to go ahead and give you this one, but yeah,
this sucks.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And so they're also doing app bundles, which there was some excitement for. And I can't think of a time where I wanted to buy a bundle, but maybe it would be beneficial for the developers and useful for them to offer app bundles.
Somebody threw out on Twitter, one of the developers threw out on Twitter that maybe there's some clever, creative way developers could leverage app bundles to do like sort of paid upgrade sort of scenarios. And I don't know how that would work. I can't even wrap my head around that, but
Well, maybe if it's a situation where there's an app bundle where you've already purchased part of the thing in the bundle.
Yeah, do you get a discount on the full price of the bundle if you already have one of the apps? Because then you could have version, you know, if version two cost, if the app costs $10, but you want to give version two to your customers for like $1, then you could say, well, this bundle is actually $101 or something, but you know, $100 of it is for this app. It could happen. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. Yeah.
Why don't they just give upgrade pricing and trials and be done with it?
They're so close. It seemed they're just so close to giving us everything we want. App preview videos, so you can preview the videos or preview what the app looks like. And I think, you know, that's going to be pretty beneficial, I think. Because you will ostensibly be able to see what the app does, what it looks like, and depending on how in-depth the developer goes and also what the limitations are for the developers in terms of creating a video.
But that's just it. I mean, we've all seen videos from developers that are eager to pitch us their apps or whatever. And,
yep.
And you know, this all this does is Apple says we'll host your video inside the store as opposed to people having to go to your websites to see it. The developer ostensibly still has to produce a freaking video
that
shows their app.
Extra work.
But tons of, I mean, that could be a ton of extra work depending on your app. And in no way, shape, or form is a video going to give you the actual experience of touching that app and using it in all the different environments that you need to use it in, right? You're in the store. You're not, you know, walking down the street. I mean, I don't know. I'm curious to see how many developers actually take advantage of this, and how. I think a year from now it'll be the kind of thing where it's like, oh yeah, you can do that, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think they're not going to bother in most cases.
No.
Well, one of the things that they did throw into Yosemite is now you can in QuickTime your iOS device shows up as a camera. So, so if you just open up QuickTime and you say, I want to do a new recording, and you can just record right through USB, right there, just do it all the stuff that you need to on your device and make that happen. So
you don't have to reflector anymore.
Yeah.
See, are these app previews going to actually be sales tools, or are they going to be the thing that, like right now, if I look at an app and it's cheap enough, I say, well, you know what? I'm not sure if it's going to do what I want, but for $5 or less, I can find out. Right. So there's a lot of app sales that happen because of that logic. If you put a video in, all you've done is taken those people that would have bought it for $5 and then realized it wasn't for them, but not been all that upset about it. You've taken them out of the equation. So I don't get that there's an incentive for developers to do this.
It's a lot of time and effort, or at least money, to produce something. Right. You know, that's going to be able to show it off. And, you know, how long
potentially deter people from buying your app?
And are they going to limit them?
I would imagine. You know, sure. You know,
are you going to be
Apple.
Limited to a 30 seconds, a minute, two minutes? Can you put up a 30 minute demo video? I doubt it.
Yeah. So, some big stuff, extensibility, and we touched on it a little bit. But there's stuff within the share sheet. So you can developers can now plug into not just other apps. And the way that works, I believe, is the developers of those specific apps say, I want to support Pinterest and Evernote and this and that. And that's the only way it really works. Now you can just say, hey, I'm available as a sharing service. And then any app that picks up on that via the OS internal share sheet can grab that and share its content through that, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's one way it's extensible.
Yep, there's also actions. So they showed the example of having Bing translate right within Safari, which was very cool. So you can do stuff like that. It's pretty clear that if Bing translate is going to work, then I'm guessing the entire DOM is going to be available.
Is exactly what it is. The entire DOM is available to any plugin.
Awesome.
So, yeah, in theory, it means that one password is probably already working in Dave Tier's hotel room here. That would be, well, because they've already done that work, right? They already know how to muck with the DOM. They just need to bundle it inside of that, you know, whatever you need to put it inside to make it an extension, and you're done.
Yep. I've gotten an email.
So are the Cassidy and Green guys still at Apple?
Oh, wow.
They're going to bring back Conflict Catcher?
Yeah. Well, that it's
when
right?
I heard extensions that over my mind went immediately. It's like, oh, God.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Giving everyone equal, unfettered access to the DOM simultaneously. But it's not simultaneously, right? These things aren't firing.
I'm joking. But, you know, that was the first thought that went through my head. It's like, no, we're in a different time now. It's not going to be like that.
No, because you only get one extension running in Safari at a time. Right. Yep. That's right.
Because it all goes through the OS. And that's the reason they've finally brought it to fruition, is because they figured out a way to they act as the middleman. Everything is still sandboxed, and it's still negotiated through.
And they aren't just Safari extensions. I mean, everything's an extension.
Yeah, you can extend apps, can extend other apps.
Yeah, I meant in terms of there's a bunch of different kinds of extensions, not just extensions to Safari. And I guess maybe this is more back on the Maverick side that I'm talking about.
You mean Yosemite?
Or Yosemite side. Thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, because like the widgets in the notification center are extensions, mm-hmm. and the iCloud document stuff, those are all extensions. So there's a different extension points. I don't think they call them, they have a specific name for them. I forget what they're called now.
Types or whatever.
But you know, one specific extension point is the whole replaceable keyboards thing on iOS, which I know is further down on our list, but that's, you know, that's another really interesting thing where you can drop. I mean, that's huge to be able to drop in a different keyboard that does something else.
Yeah, that's something that a lot of people who switched to Android, or people who have looked at the iOS and considered it but decided, you know, I don't want it because I want to have my own keyboard. I want to have swipe or what have you.
Yeah, right. Right. Well, and it, you know, but it's funny. One of the first things I thought of was, oh, great. Finally, text expander, right?
Yep. Is,
but it's a hack, right? The only way in is to do an entire keyboard, right? You don't get to say, well, I just want to augment every keyboard, which is what text expander really should do.
Sure.
Right.
But it can't. There's no path there. So you would have to choose between using the swipe keyboard or the text expander keyboard or the standard keyboard, but not any combination of those three, unless Text Expander partners with the swipe guys and gets
there
support in there.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, but that requires sort of an out of band conversation, you know? So it's good.
They've had good luck at that route before, though. Right.
I know.
I mean, their API was adopted by a lot of folks. So.
Right up until Apple broke the
mechanism
that they wanted to use. So, yeah, but this is the right way to do it. I mean, this is way better to just do it as a keyboard and be done with it, you know, so.
Now, I saw something, and Dave, you might have heard about it, that keyboards will not have access to the text, and they won't have access to the bubbles. You know, they actually, when you tap on some text and you get the bubbles pop up. Does that mean that, I know the way that Text Expander works on the Mac is that it does a cut, copy, paste kind of action real fast.
Yeah, it's going to have to do, that's actually, maybe it's impossible for Text Expander, right? Because it's going to have to parse as you type, or maybe it'll be the kind of thing that, you know, if your expansion shortcut is comma, you know, DHADD, which is what I do for my address, right? That it doesn't actually put that into the document until it realizes, no, you're not typing. And if I type DHADS and then space, it says, okay, now I can put DHADS up there, but it's not going to put it up until it knows that you're out of expansion land.
Yeah, it would be an interesting experience. I can definitely see what you're saying. So you'd have a situation where every single word is kind of being buffered
by
the keyboard, and then it outputs based on what it sees.
Right. Right.
Or I guess it could do something where if it is a shortcut, then it could just do a backspace for however many characters and then input whatever it needs to. I'm sure they're going to try and do something.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, it could do a backspace. Yeah, I wonder what happens if autocorrect kicks in, though. This gets interesting. I mean, these are, right?
They're probably working on
it. We could be here forever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Third-party document types for iCloud Drive, which is cool. So you can throw in your own support for your special document types, and widgets for Notification Center. We don't really know if that's gonna. I guess that would require having an app on the home screen. You can't just download a widget.
They're all exposed through the app that you have. So an app developer could then build a widget into their app that would be able to be loaded in Notification Center. I'm pretty sure that's how these things will work.
Yeah. So like if you have the eBay app, it'll put a little widget in there so you can keep track of the stuff that you're bidding on and up your bid and that kind of thing.
Yep.
So I think that's all that for extensibility, right? So you got the Touch ID API, which is awesome. So developers can now utilize Touch ID to pull in authentication. So ostensibly for like 1Password, you can just touch your thumb and unlocks your 1Password. And they said that works just essentially through unlocking the keychain, right?
Yeah, iCloud keychain. Right.
Yep, which is cool. Right. Pretty simple. Camera API, which is something that people were a little
Thank
bit excited
goodness.
About, where you can do manual controls of focus, exposure, and white balance. That's on the developer side, of course.
That's another, I don't know if we touched on, I think another one of those extensions is photo filters.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah, That's yeah, right. yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I forgot about that.
Yeah, so you could have, if you've installed somebody's third-party app for doing photo editing, and they have really cool filters, they could make those available in the photo app, it seems like.
Or ostensibly other
I'm
apps,
about
right?
That, right? Or other apps.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Dave, that would work in other apps, right? So if you have like the Waterlog app and it says, hey, I'm a photo thing and, and I'll work with other photo things, then other photo apps can also utilize that too, right?
Yeah. It's just important to remember, I think this is universal. It's certainly Apple's goal. And I don't think they've broken this rule. All of these extensions live out of band of the application that they appear to live inside, right? So the photo filter is not actually messing with your application. Your application is sort of calling out to the OS and saying, go do something for me. And the OS says, I've got this extra thing. We can pop this in here. But it doesn't,
you got it right.
those extensions don't get access to the data inside your app unless your app is actually handed the data out to the OS for this. I know it's a subtle difference, but it's really kind of important. And it, like you were saying before, this is kind of the way that Jobs would have done this and doesn't really go against, kind of his paradigms, in that sense, because it's like it's keeping it. It's really creative, actually. It's secure and yet functional.
It throws up the actual UI from like the Waterlog app or what have you.
Yeah, yeah.
So say that again.
So like when you're in the Photos app and you say, I want to do the Waterlog photo filter thing, you press that button and then the Waterlog UI pops up.
Yeah,
with
it's
photo.
It's basically like a view into the app almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's really almost doing what we've always been doing, except it's taking care of the bouncing back and forth.
Right.
You don't have to bounce. That's a great way of thinking about it. That might cover most of the extensions, right? Yeah. Even the Bing Translate thing. You could copy and paste it in but that's a disaster.
Yeah.
Oh, one cool thing that I'm sure you guys don't know about because it blew me away when I just happened to be sitting in a session. So you know how you go on the web to your favorite website and you go to log in and it uses iCloud Keychain,
mm-hmm.
right? And it logs you in and that's great. And then you go back to you did that on your Mac and now you go on your iPhone in Safari and you go to log in and there's your password and that's awesome, right?
Sure.
And then you launch your favorite website. They have an app and you launch their app and you go to log in and nothing, right? You've got to go and figure out where to get your password from and type it all in and it's a disaster. That problem goes away with about 4 lines of code in iOS 8.
Awesome.
Apps can be given access to their to the iCloud keychain data for websites. You have to actually put something on your server that matches a declaration you make in the app that says I am okay to access that domain, and the domain has a thing that says, yes, this app bundle is okay to access it. So it creates that secure trust relationship. But then the user has to also give it permission. You go to the login form and it pops up, you know, it's like standard Apple UI, and it says, do you want to give such and such app access to the credentials from, you know, website.com? And if you say okay, that's it. You don't see the login. I know. It's freaking awesome. It's what it should be doing.
Yep.
So I just wanted to bring that up because I thought that was a pretty cool thing.
So it's kind of like if you've been using Facebook and Safari for all this time and you decide, okay, I want to go download the app and pretending that they don't already take care of all this stuff.
I was going
to
say
you.
Facebook's a bad example because it's built into the OS already.
Right, but
yes, that's
pretending
exactly
that doesn't
it.
Happen. So you open up Facebook and they have all this code in there, or the four lines of code, and it just says, okay, we can access your keychain, and you hit go and it goes.
Yeah, like the Yelp app or the Mac Geek Gab app, right, is the same way. It's
right.
Like, yep.
Right.
That's pretty good.
Cool. So HomeKit, another thing that we were talking about, and we were concerned that it was going to be just a made for iPhone sticker or a stamp that would go on things that would work, but it is not. It's just like HealthKit, where you have your own little box or your own little app that allows you to manage all of those devices, I imagine in a fairly simplistic way, because you still will have to have all the apps, I assume, associated with those individual devices on your device, and those developers have to plug into HomeKit. But once that's all done, you just to take care of all your HomeKit or home automation stuff, you just open the HomeKit app or whatever it's called, and you can just do all your stuff right from there and not have to bounce between a bunch of different apps.
Yeah, Apple hasn't announced an app. I would imagine what we'll see is third-party developers building centralized apps for these just separate sort of systems and devices. So, you know, you've got Belkin Wemo stuff, and you've got your Nest thermostat, and you've got your Hue bulbs, and maybe you have some Insteon stuff, and you have, you know, all these different apps. They'll be able to open up, again, these little extensions that say, okay, you know, I control lights and here's my options. I have the option to be on or off and, you know, to identify myself and to dim, those sorts of things. And then, you know, another HomeKit enabled app could just send a control and say, okay, I know that's and see that, right? And see, oh, you're a light and I know that you can turn on and off and dim. And I have the controls for that. And so you can control that from here.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Yeah.
And there's also Siri integration with HomeKit, which is really cool. So he gave the example of Siri, it's time to go to bed. And then she performs all the different actions like closing the garage door, turning off the lights and all that stuff, which is really cool.
Yeah, he didn't explain though where the automation part came into play. That's the one thing is where, because historically with home automation system, you have to have some sort of app that's running or server that's running that runs the scripts for those commands.
Yeah, there's got to be some way to set that up.
Yeah. I think that and HealthKit are both kind of telegraphing maybe, you know, some new hardware or new technologies coming from Apple down the road.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think for sure, and I think the amazing thing though is that with all of these kits, these middlewares, and sort of how Apple's exposing things, what I took away from it that I thought was really huge, and there's not a lot of people talking about, is this concept that, you know, Apple's really obfuscating these devices and these other apps and these software, and sort of I'm saying almost to the point of debranding and rebranding these things under their own brand. They're like, your interface is going to be your iPhone, your iPad. You're going to have an Apple experience with a bunch of products and services that aren't Apple's, which is just really an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah.
And I, you know, some of those products and services are going to be Apple's, but they don't have to be. But at the end of the day, the consumer experience is ultimately an Apple experience, right? It's my iPad that's controlling my home automation system. I'm not going to think about, oh, well, I've got a Belkin Wemo thing and I've got a Philips bulbs over there. You know, it's just like I have this cool app and it's on my iPad and I control everything. And they're doing the same thing with the whole Safari stuff, right? It's just I need information. I need a map or I need, directions or I need movie times and information or I need a translation or I need a conversion. and you're going to do it in Spotlight, and you're going to have an Apple Spotlight experience, but really a lot of the work is being done by Bing or Yahoo or, you know, some other service.
Yeah, we didn't actually mention that. So Spotlight has a bunch of new stuff built into it now. So it searches the internet, just like Google search or Wikipedia search or iTunes search as well.
But you look at all this, and Apple, in one fell swoop, in this one keynote, is saying we are going to be the digital hub of everything in your life. Right? And here's all the ways to hook into it.
I'm all for it. I like it. There was one thing that was announced during one of the sessions, and Dave, you might have. I think it was during the state of the platform.
State of the platform, state of the union. I think is what they call it.
Yep. There was. Yep. So they're talking about game controllers, and so now game controllers. I wrote it down. I can't see. Yeah, game controllers forwarding. I believe is what it's called.
Yeah.
And as soon as they, so the way that works is he gave the example of you have an iPhone with plugged into a game controller, and you can use that to control a gaming experience on a Mac or an iPad. And immediately I thought Apple TV.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. And of course, I think the screen would interact in a way as well. So you kind of get the like a Wii U sort of situation going too.
Yep.
Which is kind of cool. Metal is a new thing. I guess I don't fully understand it, but I think that it kind of takes over from OpenGL. Am I correct?
That's what it seems like to me. Adam, would you feel the same way or?
Yeah, I mean, it's a much lower level sort of thing though, right? I mean, you're basically writing as close to the processor, as close to the metal as you possibly can.
And, but as you say that, I'm not really sure what you mean. So they said that, well, this shrinks the layer.
Oh, I don't know
layer.
What I mean either.
Okay, okay, fair enough. We don't know what we're talking
That's
about.
That's just what they say.
It shrinks the layer of the OpenGL down to almost the bare metal is how they presented it. But it ultimately translates to way, way better performance for games and that sort of stuff.
Sorry,
it's OpenGL for, if OpenGL was only written, if it wasn't open, right? If it was just GL, it could be written way closer to the metal, right? But the whole concept was you write for OpenGL and now it works on all these things. Whereas Apple says you write for metal, and unless I'm misunderstanding it, it works on our stuff.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, that's
the same thing like Swift.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, but my guess is they'll open source Swift at some level, right?
Yeah, but you're not going to see Swift being able to be, even if they did that, what are the odds that you're going to be able to take your Swift code and port it to an Android app?
Yeah, I don't think they would like that. Well, considering the fact that...
Well, I don't know that they care. I just don't,
It's not in their best interest.
Yeah, it's not. But I don't know, we didn't actually mention the fact that you brought up the Nest thermostat, Adam, but it was not on one of their slides. They showed another thermostat, one that I've never seen before, and I'm guessing that they're not going to be supporting Nest.
It's the Honeywell one.
It's the Honeywell one, yeah. But they also didn't put Crestron up either. So
Nest might not have a choice.
Yeah.
Honestly. Because this is the thing, is because somebody asked me, you know, with my big sort of vision, is like, why would anybody want to participate in this if their stuff's getting rebranded as Apple? And I said, they said it right at the top of the keynote, 800 million iOS devices in the market.
Yeah, that's why.
Yep. You know, their consumers are going to demand it, and you will start to see people make buying decisions of, hey, I really want a Nest. Oh, it doesn't work with my, you know, iHome software or my app. Well, I guess I'll get this other one. Yeah. I mean, that is a logical decision that people will make.
Yep, totally.
Yep. But Apple's not going to be able to buy the name iHome like they did iPhone.
That would cost them too much. You know, my home software, but they do.
You know they want it.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Well, and iHome wants them to want it too.
Well, you know what's really cool to me though is because these things are open and these extensions are open to apps, it doesn't even have to be Apple's app. So, you know, someone might even make a better app than whatever Apple's thing is. So, and I'm sure they will. So it's going to be cool on the consumer side to have choice too for these things.
Yeah, they opened a lot of stuff up. That's sort of the mind-blowing thing is it's like, here's all this new stuff, and don't worry, it's not just stuff that we're doing. It's stuff you can do too. at the same, well, the same pace is sort of, I mean, starting at the same time as Apple, yeah, right, in ostensibly, which is great. Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing that it's probably the biggest, it's essentially their one more thing that they brought out was Swift. It's their new programming language. And I barely know anything about programming. I know I tried doing a little bit of Objective-C, learning Objective-C, with like some Lynda videos. And this happened after I did a majority of the development work for Appler. So I had experience with PHP and I thought, okay, this is a good time for me to get into Objective-C. And as soon as I started getting into it, I'm thinking, this language is so incredibly crazy. And I mean, it is pretty crazy and nuts. But the big thing about Swift now is that it's, correct me if I'm wrong, it's based on Objective-C. They say that it's, you know, what would Objective-C be without the C? So it's just a more simplistic, more expressive, easier to deal with version of Objective-C.
I don't know if I'd call it more expressive.
Well, they said more expressive over and over. So I'm
more I don't know. It's much more compact. It's probably more efficient, but a little less probably readable to most developers.
Well, but maybe, I mean, maybe more readable, because if you have a big chunk of code, it's harder to read a big chunk of code as opposed to a tiny little piece of code, depending on what you're doing.
Yeah. To me, it's more like, you know, they're taking out a lot of the syntax to make it more compact. And when things, and generally in coding, when things get more compact, they get harder to read.
Well, I've talked to many developers about it, and some of them are totally stoked and most of them are petrified, not petrified, but just, you know, like, okay, I guess I'm going to have to deal with this someday, because there's going to come a time where there's going to be new frameworks. You know, this is sort of the end of Objective-C, right?
Yep.
So
yeah,
right. New frameworks, and you can do 50-50. You can have Swift code right alongside your Objective-C code in your app, right, and it's fine. But new frameworks from Apple are probably going to be Swift only at some point. They have not finalized Swift yet, so I don't think that'll happen quite yet. But yeah, you know, the biggest thing I hear from developers is that all the type, they're very concerned about going back to a day where you do not specify the type of a variable and the compiler interprets it for you. That's kind of scary to a lot of people that are used to controlling exactly how their apps work.
Yeah, would be scary to me.
I would imagine that you can probably specify what the type of a variable is.
If that's true, they have not made that clear to any of the developers that I have talked to about it.
Huh.
And I realize that puts me like three arm's lengths away from any responsibility for saying whether you can or not. But,
right.
You know, I don't mean to, I don't know. And I don't know that these developers know either, but I know their feeling is, oh man, you know, this is weird. So,
yeah.
Well, and object-oriented programming, you have to remember, let's rewind all the way back to like the next days. The object-oriented guys were the laughing stock of the nerd world. Nobody, everybody thought they were just freaking nuts. And there were a handful of them who saw it and said, this is the way things are going to be, and dedicated themselves to it. And those people that dedicated themselves and stayed with it did really well for themselves. And I'm not just talking about Jobs and Apple,
right,
but everybody around, you know, Will Shipley and Ken Case and Andrew Stone. And right, I mean, these people have all had significant success because they essentially learned how to program on an iPhone 30 years ago, 25 years ago. That's a good thing. And they stuck, and they didn't give up, right? I mean, that's the real trick, is they stuck with it. So
yeah.
Are we seeing the same thing with Swift? Probably, you know, some of that.
Well, and it's the other thing about Swift is it's just, it's time. I mean,
yes,
I'm not even that deep into it, but I know enough to know that, you know, that baggage stuff they're talking about is significant. You know, you have C that was adapted into Objective-C, and there's a lot of stuff in there that's just, it's antiquated, you know, and Apple's doing what they often do, which is to say, you know, we're going to start over from scratch and we're going to do a new thing. But what's nice is at least they made it so that you can combine the two, and there should be an easy transition for those who want to transition.
Yep.
Well,
and I think that a big part of the motivation behind Swift is to make the coding process more approachable. Right.
So they that's the real question, right? Is how attractive is this going to be to people that don't know Objective-C? Because that's more important, frankly.
Well, yeah. So you have things like the playground in there, and also during during some of the earlier sessions, they had something like they talked about how the help files are now interactive, which is awesome. So the documentation, I mean, when you're programming, you gotta go. At some point, you're gonna dive into documentation, figure out what supporting functions and methods and all that stuff can do for you, and figure out how it works. And typically, once you look at something that you haven't worked with before, you're gonna say, "Okay, I wanna try this and make sure I fully understand how to use it." So you go out and you create your own little scratch pad, write a little bit of code, see how it runs, and get an understanding of how it works. And now they have interactive documentation that not only gives you how it works, examples, but it also gives you that little scratch pad to see how that code will work right there, so you can get a good understanding of it. And I think that's awesome. Adam, you have to get out of here?
Pretty soon.
Okay, we're wrapping
up. How close are we to wrapping up?
Like a few minutes. If you have to get out of here in 2 minutes, we can let you leave. But yeah, I guess that's an interesting perspective, Dave, that I kind of figured the developers would be more excited, but that's just based on me and not having lots of experience with coding in Objective-C. And I can understand somebody who has been going at it for a long, long time would be wary of big changes like that.
Yeah. Well, and remains to be seen, right? And like I said, it may not matter. Maybe it is more for you than it is for the existing developers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
with the old.
Yeah. And then one last neat thing that I saw in another session was developer analytics. They're getting access to see analytics on how their apps are performing. So they can see not only how many people go to see their actual app pages, they can see how many people download them. Which developers were just like screaming and throwing chairs and just punching the air and just so happy about when they heard that. Because, I mean, I can imagine it's just really frustrating to not know how your stuff is performing.
Yeah, and the thing is, Apple knows that. Everyone has known that Apple knows that stuff.
Sure.
They just didn't have a way to package it for individual developers until now, which is great. Yeah, it's good.
So, yeah, we're not going to do picks this week because we've already gone like 2 hours.
All right.
Holy crap.
And I've, yeah, well, almost, well, there's a little bit of pre-talk too. But yeah, so with that, you can find the show notes and the picks that we usually have at wehavecommunicators.com and theiosshow.com when I get that set up.
So say that's not working yet, Michael. I checked it already.
I know. It's there. I have the domain. I just haven't set it up yet. Of course, review the show on iTunes. Tell a friend. Send your feedback to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com or feedback@theiosshow.com when it happens. Not yet. feedback@wehavecommunicators.com right now. Advertising, of course, is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com, and we love them. Hint, hint to the guy who's sitting here.
We love you too, Michael.
Yes. Dave Hamilton, of course, is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. He also does Backbeat Media, as I hinted at. Dave Hamilton, @DaveHamilton is his name on Twitter if you want to follow him there. So thanks a lot for being here. It was very, very useful for this specific discussion for you.
I'm glad it worked. The timing was like the one window of opportunity I had, and it was actually a nice way for me to sort of debrief from the week because I'm done with sessions now. I'm flying home in the morning, and I'm going to head off to the beer bash or whatever they call it.
Good.
Shortly.
So. Yeah, you got to get on that beer bash.
Yeah.
Adam Christensen, of course, he's at the MacCast, MacCast.com. He's at MacCast on Twitter, and member.maccast.com is the member version of the show. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, we'll see you next time on the iOS show. An iPod. A phone.
So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck, yuck. Yuck, yuck, no. Yuck, 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 no. Yuck, no. Yuck, yuck, no. No, 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 no. You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers. Our fingers. Our fingers. Our fingers. Our fingers. Yuck. Our fingers. Yuck. Communicator. An iPod. A phone. Are you getting it? An iPod. A phone. An iPod. A phone. An internet communicator.